I think the typical forgiveness sermon, which I will be delivering later this month, is about how forgiveness of others really is good for our own well-being. It is true, and I don't mean to belittle that thought in any way, but I think it's much more difficult for that to happen when we turn our gaze towards ourselves and attempt to extend that same grace of forgiveness to us. After 51 and a half years of life, I know I look a lot younger, I think I've come to the conclusion that the things that we need to give ourselves for happen when we stray from the center or core of who we are in our thoughts and our deeds. In other words, if we're doing our work and growing as emotional and spiritual beings, we continue to evolve in our own understanding of our core personhood, evolve in areas like who we are as whole people, what is meaningful for us, and how we'd like to live as balanced human beings. Now, this gets tested all the time. There was some point in the last 10 years where I made a conscious decision that I needed to be a vessel of love. I thought I needed to walk the walk and talk the talk. I've talked in previous sermons about how I was inspired by the Reverend Mary Harrington, who said she approached life with this question: what is the most loving thing that I can do right now? Well, long before I ever heard of that, I thought, how can I be a vessel of love in any situation? What would I have to do in my thoughts and my actions to live as a loving, giving human being, setting appropriate boundaries, doing most everything I could out of love? In some ways, this was my own personal vision statement, the way I wanted to live my life, the promise I made to myself, and the center or core of my personal philosophy. So the question arises, what happens when you don't live up to that core? Or in fact, what happens when you don't live up to your own personal aspirations? You see, it doesn't only have to be about living as a vessel of love. There are so many other things that we aspire to do where we fall short or struggle or even fail. Once again, I don't only speak from a position as a minister. I speak as well as a son, as a sibling, as a friend, as a spouse, as a straight white male. I speak from all kinds of roles and sources of experience. There are times when I wish I had been a better son, more able to account for and forgive the human frailties of my parents. I wish that I had been a better brother, not immersed so much in my own life and a little more open to the lives of my two brothers. As a friend, I know I could have been there many more times for friends who were in need. And I can't even begin listing how I could be a better spouse, although I know someone who could. And as a straight white male, I know that I could be more sensitive in my language, in my thoughts, in my actions, to those whose lifestyles, gender, skin color, ethnicities, or socioeconomic positions in life are different than my own. So today I stand before you and I confess that I have done plenty of emotional, psychological, and spiritual work in my life. I have some good ideas what lies at the core of who I am as a person. I have some pretty good ideas of how I would like to live and be in this world, and I confess that I often fall short. I stand before you and I confess because I believe confession isn't only for Catholics. Most major faiths call on some sort of confession because it's important for us. Yom Kippur is a good example. Confession, they say, is good for the soul. Well, I believe confession is a necessary part of helping us to acknowledge, forgive, and evolve our constant and never-ending practice of being human. In a sermon about the link between confession and forgiveness by the Reverend Dr. Linda Anderson, she wrote, "Confession from the Latin means to acknowledge together. Thus my question," she says, "looks for the relationship between acknowledgement and forgiveness. Acknowledgement means to recognize as valid, and recognition means to admit what has happened, noting the consequences of our actions, allowing space for the feelings that may arise." Most of us probably know how much harder it is to forgive or achieve any really real reconciliation when we never receive acknowledgement from another person, when we never make acknowledgement to ourselves. Often recognition prompts us to make atonement to the ones whom our actions have hurt when it will not cause further harm. Often recognition teaches us something about ourselves and our effects on others, and we become more able to make adjustments in what we say and do rather than repeat the same behavior over and over and face the same unhappy consequences of it. And finally, she says, recognition makes it possible for us not only to express the desire not to cause harm, but actually to become empowered to change. I see this as a very important part of forgiving ourselves. The recognition that we have strayed from our hopes, our visions, our aspirations of how we desire to live our lives, and the open acknowledgement of that. This acknowledgement is actually called for in most therapeutic programs, including many 12-step programs. It is at the core of this familiar statement created by theologian Reinhold Niebuhr in its supposed original form. God, give us the grace to accept with serenity the things that cannot be changed, courage to change the things which should be changed, and the wisdom to distinguish the one from the other. To me, this prayer has multiple layers. We can't always be in control, but it's immensely important for us to know, be aware, and work through what we cannot change and we have no control over. This is specifically true for things that we take responsibility for and have nothing to do with. How many times have you taken responsibility for a situation where you punish yourself for something that has happened that you could not control or did not call upon yourself? I can't tell you the number of movies I've seen where this has been part of the plot. Good Will Hunting is one, where the main character Will, in the emotional climax of the movie, forgives himself for the child abuse that he suffered as a child. Child abuse rained down upon him, child abuse that no child is ever responsible for. Ever. Or plenty of other movies, or in that case, real life situations that many of us have been through, where the words come out, "If I only had ... So often that phrase has to do with something we never could have predicted and may have never been able to control. And yet we feel responsible. We hold on to it. We let it nag away or eat at our insides. The ability to forgive ourselves may start with that first step of acknowledgement. We could not have changed this. Or I did my best. Or I actually had nothing to do with being responsible for this, no matter how much I think I should be responsible for everything that happens in the entire world. I see some of you join me in that. And it is equally as vital to know, be aware of, and work through what we can change. This takes understanding and acknowledgement, or in a different word, confession to ourselves, if to no one else. When we stray from our core and we confess this to ourselves or others, confess about things we can change, then we can ask the question, can we act with courage to forgive, evolve, and move forward? This takes form in 100 different ways every day. We hold ourselves responsible and accountable for plenty of things we can change. How many of us suffer from perfectionism? Don't raise your hand. It's a rhetorical question. We think that things should just be a certain way in our lives, and if not, we hold ourselves in judgment. How many times have those of us who are perfectionists or have a perfectionist streak wished that we had said or done just the perfect thing at that moment? And if you get asked a question, no matter what the subject, it is your job to have just the right answer. Of course, keeping your cool, as you don't want to appear out of sorts in front of anyone. What about those who think, if I just worked a little harder, or if I were just a little better, I would be the person I need to be? Or what about judgment itself? How often do we jump to judgment or conclusions about a person or a situation without really knowing the whole story, or caring really to find out what it is? I'm not saying that we shouldn't strive to be more patient or understanding or loving. I'm saying that we should not punish ourselves when these things occur. For we are human, which is an ongoing practice. And if we continue to be aware, to be open, to be striving to grow, forgiving ourselves is part of the process of being human. And forgiveness is not only good for the soul. It actually seems to be good for our overall well-being. According to Fred Luskin, director of Stanford University's Forgiveness Project, there's some evidence if you're angry or less forgiving, you tend to have a greater incidence of almost all conditions. In an article I found on the subject in the Seattle Times, it's supposed to be healthy to forgive, but how do you do it? What does it really mean? There are many models to forgive, and this one cites things that were developed by Dr. Luskin. One, know how you feel about what happened and then tell a couple of friends. Two, commit to do what's necessary in a healthy way to feel better. Three, remember, forgiveness doesn't have to mean reconciliation or condoning. What you're after is peace. Although I think reconciliation is good. Four, recognize your primary distress comes from what you're feeling and thinking, not the offense. Forgiveness helps heal those hurt feelings. Five, use stress management techniques to soothe yourself. Six, give up expecting things from other people or your life that they don't give you. But remember, you can hope and work for health, love, peace, and prosperity. Six, look for another way to get your goals met rather than through the experience or person that seems to keep hurting you. Seven, remember the best revenge is a life well lived. Learn to look for love, beauty, and kindness all around you. And finally, stop talking about bad things. And remind yourself that you've survived, grown, and persevered. When I read this, I thought, how can we apply this to ourselves? It sounds so easy. But when we do apply this to ourselves, it can be incredibly difficult when we are the ones we need to forgive. So we, being the loving community that we are, here to love and support each other in the quest for fulfillment and deepening, we are going to help each other on the road to forgiveness today. Today, I invite you to step forward, and with a pinch of salt placed in this water here, may you also place something you wish to forgive yourself for in the water to dissolve like the salt. Salt may dissolve but does not disappear, but the water, like the love of this congregation and love of self, will help forgiveness flow more freely. As you place this thing in the bowl, I invite you, if you wish, to say, "I forgive myself and I begin again in love." And I'll begin, because I got plenty. I forgive myself and I begin again. Please come forward when you're ready.
Wow. Once again, from the words of Reinhold Niebuhr, nothing worth doing is completed in our lifetime. Therefore, we are saved by hope. Nothing true or beautiful or good makes complete sense in any immediate context of history. Therefore, we are saved by faith. Nothing we do, however virtuous, can be accomplished alone. Therefore, we are saved by love. And no virtuous act is quite as virtuous from the standpoint of our friend or foe as from our own. Therefore, we are saved by the final form of love, which is forgiveness. May it be so.